We are diving straight into one of the most foundational and really critical challenges in education, teaching a child to read and doing it well, especially when English isn't their first language. I mean, imagine the stakes for a 5 or 6 year old who's already tackling this huge linguistic hurdle.
That difficulty is exactly where this fascinating study begins. We're looking at an action research project. It was conducted right inside a kindergarten classroom in Karachi, Pakistan.
Okay.
And the researcher was focused on 20 young students who were, you know, reading slowly, hesitantly. They were making a lot of mistakes. Their low reading fluency was creating a bottleneck, really. It was hurting their comprehension and, well, chipping away at their confidence.
And the mission here was incredibly focused, which is what makes this data just so compelling. The question was, could a highly structured, evidence-based intervention, and one lasting only 6 weeks, could it create a dramatic, measurable change?
Exactly.
So we're going to unpack the specific strategies they chose and then look at the before and after picture the researcher painted with the data.
And the beauty of action research is that the educator is right there, identifying the problem, implementing the solution, and then measuring the impact in real time. The problem here was clear. These students were performing well below the expected benchmarks for reading fluency. So our job today is to analyze their approach and really understand how these targeted strategies didn't just, you know, marginally improve skills, they fundamentally transformed them.
Before we get into the strategies, we should probably clarify our terms. We hear fluency, and I think we often just think speed, but in literacy, it's much richer than that, right?
Absolutely. The research base, it defines reading fluency as a sort of three-part harmony. Mm-hmm. You have accuracy, that's recognizing the words correctly. Then you have speed, which is, you know, the automaticity of it all, the flow. Mm-hmm. And finally, expression, reading with meaning, using the right pitch and pausing.
So it's not about rushing. It's about reading smoothly enough that your brain can stop focusing on just decoding sounds and start focusing on understanding the story. That's the critical bridge to comprehension.
Precisely. If the child is halting every few words to sound them out, all their cognitive energy is spent on the mechanics of reading. There's nothing left for comprehension. Fluency frees up the brain for that meaning-making.
Okay, so they had a target to boost this three-part harmony. What were the instructional pillars they built the six-week program on?
The intervention was pretty intense and consistent, about 30 to 35 minutes a day, 5 days a week for 6 weeks straight. And they focused on three specific research-validated strategies. The first pillar was guided reading.
Let's elaborate on that for a second. Guided reading isn't just story time. It's a scalpel, not a sledgehammer, isn't it?
It is. The researcher used guided reading 3 times a week. Think of it as small group instruction tailored to a specific need among those students. The teacher provides this targeted scaffolding, so immediate coaching and feedback as the children read aloud. It's a very supportive environment.
Right.
And it's highly effective because it integrates decoding skills with comprehension work at the same time.
Okay, the second pillar sounds like the crucial engagement tool, phonics games, and these were conducted daily.
This is where the interactive element really shone. Because these were English as a second language learners, the goal was to reinforce those essential decoding patterns, you know, to push for automatic word recognition. The games could be quick things like flashcard matching or sound to letter matching.
Making it fun.
Right. It lowers what we call the affective filter. That's the anxiety that can block learning. It makes the whole process fun, not intimidating.
And the third strategy, implemented 3 times a week, was repeated reading. This is one we hear about a lot, but why is repetition so powerful for fluency specifically?
Well, repeated reading uses short, familiar texts. The evidence shows that reading a text multiple times, it just dramatically improves accuracy and speed. When the content is familiar, the brain stops struggling with recognition. It can focus on flow, on rhythm, on expression. It really builds muscle memory for the eyes and the voice.
So they had the roadmap, guided reading for targeted support, phonics games for fun, automatic practice, and repeated reading for that fluency drill. How did they actually track these 5 and 6 year olds in real time to get data accurate enough for a, you know, a scientific study?
They used the gold standard in early literacy assessment. It's called the Running Records Tool, or RRR. It's not a standardized test you take at a desk. The teacher listens to the child read aloud, and they mark in real time every word read, every error made, and every self-correction.
So it's a highly granular performance review.
Exactly. It allowed the researcher to capture 4 key metrics. Reading accuracy as a percentage, fluency rate in words per minute, total errors, and critically, how often the student self-corrected. And this level of detail is what allowed them to use statistical analysis to confirm the changes were real and, you know, not just random.
Okay, let's unpack the results. They committed 6 weeks to this intensive, structured approach. Did it payoff for those 20 kindergarten students? Let's start with the most obvious metric, accuracy.
The payoff was. It was immediate and dramatic. Before the intervention, the students' average accuracy, so how many words they recognized correctly, was hovering around 73%.
73. So they were struggling with roughly one in every four words.
Right. And after the 6 weeks of guided reading, games, and repetition,
what happened?
Your average accuracy soared to nearly 84%.
Wow.
That is a massive shift in a foundational skill. Instead of struggling with one in four words, they were now succeeding with, you know, nearly 9 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
The statistical analysis showed this gain was absolutely driven by the intervention. It was an undeniable success.
I think we sometimes lose sight of what those numbers mean in a classroom. That jump from 73 to 84% accuracy, it means reading went from being this profoundly frustrating stop and start chore to something manageable, maybe even enjoyable.
It transforms the whole classroom environment. And that transformation is compounded when you look at speed, at automaticity and flow.
Right.
Pre-intervention, the average fluency rate was about 25 words per minute. That's slow. That's hesitant. That's like feeling like you have a bad internet connection for every single paragraph.
And where did they land after the 6 weeks?
They jumped to an average rate of 34 words per minute. That's an average increase of nearly 9 WPM in just 6 weeks.
That's huge for a five-year-old.
It's a monumental shift toward automaticity. And the result was just as conclusive. The intervention was the cause of that improvement.
That improvement in flow means the kids are not just reading more words correctly, they're reading them faster. That's the definition of achieving automaticity. When you combine those gains, the overall reduction in errors must have been staggering.
It was. The average number of total reading errors plummeted from around 34 errors per reading passage down to just 20. This just confirms that the structured program resulted in far fewer decoding struggles, less hesitation. The whole thing was sound, the execution was consistent, and the results were conclusive. If you apply these research-backed strategies consistently, they work. They work powerfully for ESL learners in this context.
So to summarize where we are, higher accuracy, faster flow, and massively fewer mistakes. A total win. Okay, here's where this deep dive gets really interesting. Because not every single metric celebrated the same massive success. While accuracy and speed soared, there was one key metric that did not significantly improve. And that was the student self-correction behavior.
This is the critical finding that pushes this study beyond just a simple success story. Remember, the running records tool tracked how often a child recognized they made an error and then successfully went back to fix it. That ability, it didn't change much. They were making fewer errors overall, yes. But their ability to self-monitor and course correct when they did mess up, it remained stagnant.
So the researcher found that the correlation for this skill was statistically weak, meaning the intervention didn't directly influence their metacognitive ability to monitor and revise their own reading. That seems counterintuitive. If they're better readers now, shouldn't they also be better troubleshooters?
It highlights the difference between, like, say, competence and consciousness.
Hmm.
The children's foundational reading skills, the competence improved because the three pillars strengthened their word recognition so much that they just made fewer mistakes to begin with.
Right.
But the skill of metacognition, thinking about your own thinking, recognizing an error and correcting it, that's a much more sophisticated developmental skill. It's immersion.
So while the instruction successfully fortified the foundation, 6 weeks just wasn't enough time. Or maybe the strategy wasn't targeted enough to build that complex cognitive awareness. It's a fascinating insight. You can teach a skill faster than you can teach self-regulation.
It's exactly. For kindergarten learners, self-regulation and monitoring are skills that are still under construction. The data implies that if the researcher wanted to improve self-correction specifically, she would have needed to dedicate explicit instructional time to modeling that whole failure and fix process. You can't just assume it will spontaneously emerge from better reading ability.
Let's pivot from the students to the researcher's perspective. Since this was action research, she was deeply embedded in the process. What personal insights did she gain about why the massive gains in accuracy and speed actually happened?
Her reflection was key. She realized that the strategies worked because they were interactive, play-based, and repetitive. They were consciously moving away from rote, lecture-style instruction. The engagement was the engine. When the students were having fun, their willingness to take risks and practice repeatedly just skyrockets.
And she flagged the phonics games as being particularly effective. It wasn't just fun, it was high-return fun.
It was. She noted that those games quickly led to students internalizing difficult decoding patterns, but without the anxiety of a formal test environment. It created a much more enthusiastic and, importantly, a more forgiving atmosphere in the classroom. When you're playing a game, a mistake is just. It's part of the process. It's not a personal failure.
She also reflected on her own teaching practice, yeah. Right? She realized the immense importance of explicit modeling.
Yes. You can't assume students know what fluent reading even sounds like.
Yeah.
She realized she had to explicitly demonstrate what good looks and sounds like. Modeling expression, proper pausing, flow. And that consistent tracking with the running records helped her tailor instruction to the specific needs of individual learners. It wasn't one size fits all. It was constant adjustment based on data.
This research proves that structured evidence-based strategies can create huge results and quickly. But what does that specific kind of frustrating finding about self-correction mean for you, whether you're a parent, a teacher, or just interested in how we learn new skills?
The key takeaway for practice is that this is not rocket science. Structured, research-based strategies, guided reading, games, repetition, they can be easily adapted into any curriculum without massive resources. Use guided reading in small, targeted groups. Integrate phonics games as quick, high-energy warm-ups. Consistency and quality are the critical components.
But the deeper implication connects directly back to that self-correction gap.
Absolutely. Think about that for a moment. We got remarkable, significant improvement in accuracy and speed, the performance metrics. But we did not significantly improve the underlying metacognitive skill of catching and fixing errors.
So what does this all mean? The action research from Karachi provides compelling evidence that structured literacy interventions, especially those that incorporate play and repetition, produce dramatic, measurable gains in reading accuracy and speed for young learners, particularly those tackling a second language challenge.
We saw the evidence of explosive growth in competence. But if we connect this to the bigger picture of skill development, I mean, whether you're learning a language, mastering new software, or honing a professional skill, we often just fixate on improving the final output, on minimizing errors.
But we forget to teach the crucial skill of failure management.
Exactly. How many times have you learned a complex procedure, performed it correctly 9 out of 10 times, but when the inevitable error does happen, you have no framework for identifying where you went wrong and how to fix it? The kindergarten data shows us that building foundational competence is step one. Building the metacognitive ability to monitor, recognize, and revise errors is a completely separate skill. It requires explicit practice and targeted instructional attention even after the immediate gains have been achieved. And that raises an important question. How do we purposefully build self-monitoring and critical awareness in ourselves and in others when the immediate skill improvement is already so high and the errors become fewer and farther between? That's the real challenge of turning competence into mastery.